So, it is time for us to wrap up this wonderful series that we've been going through. As a church, we have been reading one of the biographies of Jesus' life, written by a guy called Mark. We've been reading this together throughout this term, beginning in January, and we are wrapping it up today and next week on Easter Sunday. And I just want to say a really big thank you to everybody who's contributed towards this series, to Emily and Diane, to Claire, Don, Steve, and Ryan. Can we give those guys a round of applause? We've been really wonderfully served by those guys who've come and brought their voice and their perspectives to this series, and I've been really super grateful to you guys. I realized I haven't actually done this since January, so thanks, guys. You're awesome. You really did the heavy lifting this term. I really appreciate that. But over this series, we've been asking the question repeatedly, who was Jesus? We've looked at Jesus as a storyteller, a miracle worker, as a liberator, as a provocateur, as a servant leader. And I've been really grateful to each of those guys who have spoken to us, how they've kind of contextualized Jesus for us, and how they've asked, how would we respond if Jesus was in Gloucester here today? Like, how would we approach him? How would we emulate him? How would we feel if we came face to face with Jesus on our streets? And I just want to wrap up our series today by just asking that question one final time. You know, once we've heard about Jesus, once we've seen him in action, once we've had an encounter with him, we've been blessed or challenged by that, what next? Once we've been through that process and we've encountered Jesus, what do we do next? How do we respond to that? Like, what is the right response? And this is the question which Mark has been hammering all through the book. Who is Jesus and what are we going to do about it? We've seen loads of examples of people going through that process, and now, today, it's our turn. So we're going to be zooming in on a really famous little story from the book of Mark, which we read this week. But before we do, as we often do, we're going to play a very, very quick game together. Who wants to play a game? So I need 10 people. Come on. Oh, don't roll your eyes at me. It's when your wife kind of goes, ah, you're like, oh, dear. I'm a bit of a one-trick pony. Right, I need 10 people. So you don't have to do anything embarrassing. So if you're a person, come and join me. Come and grab one of these pieces of paper. That's right, well done, that's two. There you go, there's three, keep coming. Let's just grab one of these pieces of paper. What we're gonna be doing, we've got some things here, and what we're gonna do is we're gonna put them in order of most valuable to least valuable. So we'll have the most valuable thing over here, we'll have the least valuable thing over there. So we need a handful more people. So Mumbles, you could come, that'd be great. Kiri's coming, that's good. Okay, so the rest of you guys, if you're sat down, your role in this is to order these guys. So shout at them, tell them to put themselves in the right order. What have we got? We've got house, car, human life, dog, watch, we've got jam, diamond ring, there's an iPad in there somewhere. There we go. Interesting. Oh, steady on with that dog, that's no good. Okay, so extra milk. So I did wonder where the cow was going to come in this equation. Cow is, okay, car is more valuable than cow. Oh, jam needs to be higher, apparently. Oh, jam is more valuable than a watch, apparently. Oh, very good. I mean, I agree. I love a bit of jam. Last night, I said to Emily, I said, I've got 9 things. I need a 10. I literally just said, Emily, tell me a thing. And she said, jam. And I went, okay, so jam is in here. So from left to right, most valuable thing is a watch. And then we've got jam, and then perfume, and then an iPad, and then a diamond ring, and then a cow, a car, a house, a dog. A dog is more valuable than a house. Really? Okay, and then finally, on the far right here, we have human life. We all feeling pretty good about that? Left out the phone. How big is the diamond is the great question. Very good. Okay, guys, well done. Give these guys a round of applause. Well done. Thanks. I love that one. Thank you. I did wonder where the cow was going to come in that equation. You can keep the dog if you like. Okay, very good. So, if you just have a little moment to think now, what do you think is the most valuable thing that you have that you could most easily give away? So if I was to say to you, think about the thing that you have in your life, that if I was to say, give that away tomorrow, what would that thing be? And I'm not going to ask you what it is. Just have a little think. Just conceptualize that thing in your mind. What is the most valuable thing that you have that you could easily give away? Now, for some of us, if we're blessed to own a house, most valuable thing that we have is probably our house. But that would be quite difficult to give away in a hurry, wouldn't it? It would be difficult to do. Maybe if we've got a car, we might be able to give that away pretty quickly. Like some of us have cars that are worth more than others. Anyone who's seen our car will see the scratches and the bumps on it. So ours isn't worth very much at all. Maybe it's our savings. Maybe we're, again, blessed enough to have some savings. And we could give those away pretty quickly, couldn't we? Or maybe we don't have things of high value like that. Maybe some of us know that actually our most valuable possession, as we identified, is our very life, the human life that we have and the breath in our lungs. Now, if you read along with our readings in Mark this week, you will have had a treat because there was three chapters to read this week. You're welcome. And there was some pretty heavy stuff in there. There's Jesus talking about the end of the world, or so it seems. And then there's a description of Jesus' arrest and his death and his burial. And next Thursday, as I said, we're going to revisit some of those events leading up to Jesus' death in more detail on Maundy Thursday. But this week, before to finish our series, we are going to look at a little thing that happens just before Jesus gets arrested. Now, it happens at a meal. And I've asked John if he would come and read it to us. And so, as John reads this to us, this is a very evocative story. I'd encourage you to close your eyes if you want to and try and picture this scene playing out in your head as John reads.
While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor will always have with you, and you can help them at any time you want. But you will not always have me." She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will always be told in memory of her.
Thanks, John. So, who's heard this story before? Anybody ever heard this story before? Yeah, some of us have heard it before. It kind of proves true what Jesus said at the end, didn't there? Jesus said, "I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed." I quite like that because it's like we're doing that today. We're kind of fulfilling what Jesus said would be true. This story about a woman anointing Jesus with perfume, pouring perfume over Jesus, this story has captured the attention and the imagination of Christians for 2,000 years. The beauty and the mystery of what's going on here is just captivating. Like, what on earth is going on here? And I think it's really interesting that all of the four biographies of Jesus' life, each of them have some kind of a story about a woman anointing Jesus with perfume. And each of those four different biographies, they each have a different way of telling their story. They each have a different audience in mind. They each have a different agenda that's driving them. But each of them has a story about Jesus being anointed with perfume. It's one of the very few examples of things which happen in all four biographies. Now, there's some disagreement over whether Jesus was doused with perfume four times or whether he was doused with perfume one time and the details were changed. But the evidence seems to suggest that actually this might have happened to Jesus more than once. That actually each time the woman in question had a different motive and got a different response from Jesus. I just think that's kind of striking. Like, who here has ever had a bottle of perfume chucked over them? Yeah, nobody. But this wasn't common practice in Jesus' day either. Like, it wasn't like everyone was going around drenching each other in Chanel No. 5. I think it's just really curious and striking that this seems to be something which happened to Jesus more than once. Or even if it was just once, I think it's striking that all four biographies seem to think it was important to include this story of a woman pouring perfume over Jesus in some way. That in some way it's a kind of key part of all of their narratives. There's clearly something about this story, something about this act that we're supposed to be paying attention to. And so today what we're going to do is we're going to really slowly unpack this little story and learn some little details about, which I hope will help us to understand the importance of it. And I'm actually going to ask John to read that once more, that passage once more to us. And then afterwards, thanks John, afterwards we're going to break into some little groups of maybe four or five people, and just for a couple of minutes, we're just going to share the thing which really resonates with us, the thing that rose up to the surface for us in this story. So, thanks John.
While he was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. Some of those present were saying indignantly to one another, "Why this waste of perfume? It could have been sold for more than a year's wages and the money given to the poor." And they rebuked her harshly. "Leave her alone," said Jesus. "Why are you bothering her? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, and you can help them any time you want. But you will not always have me." She did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her.
Okay, so we're just going to take 3 minutes now, and I want you to just turn to three or four people sitting next to you. Now, Gloucester Vineyard people, this is a moment for you to be hospitable, to make sure that everybody is included. If this moment makes you feel uncomfortable, then you're totally welcome to just listen in to what everybody else says. But that does mean that if you're a Gloucester Vineyard person, that means you have to talk a bit more. So get into little groups and just share for 3 minutes. Make sure everybody gets a chance. What is the one thing that really has struck you today hearing this story? Okay, let's hear from some of you guys. I'd love to hear what's been going on around the room. So let's go over here first. Who wants to share from this group? Grab the mic.
Steve, Stuart. No. You go right.
Yeah, there was a couple of things that stood out. First was just that it was a real bold proclamation of that actually Jesus was heading to death, you know, that there was, you know, there was no turning back from that statement. What else, guys?
It was that point of, I won't always be with you, because I guess we're like, God's always with us, and this is Jesus going, but I won't always be with you in this form. And then Ryan made the point of like the Mary and Martha story, where one reaction is good, but there is a gooder one as well. He said better, I said gooder. I'm the one with poor grammar. But like, you do have the poor, and it's great to support the poor, but actually in this, that's an even better reaction.
That's good. You guys, anything you'd like to add? Yes, Cheryl, you've been pointed at.
Been nominated. Both Jeremy and I both pointed out the, but she did what she could, and that really stood out to us, just because that's different for each person and in each moment. And actually in that moment, Jesus knew her heart. So if her intention was good, and he blessed her because of that, because she was doing what she thought was the right thing in the moment, and Jesus appreciated that.
Anything from over here? Yeah, Phil, you're being pointed at.
I was just saying, that's probably how I would have reacted as well. Like a year's worth of salary for perfume poured out on somebody's feet. I'd have been shocked and appalled. And it doesn't make sense on one level. Like, it does make sense to sell it and feed it to the poor. Not feed the perfume to the poor, that'd be cruel. Are we talking about how it kind of mirrors when Jesus was born, and one of the gifts the wise men gave to them was myrrh? So it's the kind of funeral perfume, maybe the same stuff passed down, I don't know.
Good. Okay, maybe one more from these guys over here.
I'm going to count it, so a year's wages. It's not a minor thing.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, honestly, this, oops, Daisy. I almost don't need to carry on. You guys are so good at this. Yes, thank you for your feedback. The story is striking, isn't it? It's evocative. And with what time we've got left, we're just going to walk through it, and I'm just going to point at a few things, and we'll just see what God wants to do with that. So it says, meanwhile, Jesus was in Bethany at the home of Simon, a man who had previously had leprosy. And while he was eating, a woman came in with a beautiful jar of expensive perfume made from the essence of nard. She broke open the jar and poured the perfume over his head. How much is perfume these days? Anybody bought perfume recently? £80. Yes, that's a man speaking from experience. Yeah, I reckon it's probably about like 100 quid-ish, maybe like a day's wages if you were going to be really generous. I bought perfume for my wife once or twice. It's a minefield. There's just no way you're going to make that decision right, are you? Like, it's just a minefield. Mark tells us that this perfume was expensive. Actually, he says very expensive, but some of you guys picked up on that detail, that actually this perfume was eye-wateringly expensive. He, you know, the guys, when they were indignant, they said, you know, that's worth a year's wages. A year's wages. Now, in this country, minimum wage is about to go up to £11.44 an hour, which means that a full-time labourer's wage in this country is going to be £24,000 a year. Now, whilst that's staggering, and I can hear the accountants in the room going, and those of us who have to pay wages are wondering quite how we're going to do that, that's a staggering amount of money, isn't it? Just imagine having that amount of money in your hands, or something that's worth that amount of money in your possession. Like, I can't even imagine spending that amount of money on anything, let alone giving that thing away or losing that thing or pouring that thing out. Can you imagine? You know, this woman decides to open this jar of perfume and pour out a year's worth of money over Jesus' head. Why? This perfume was for sure the most valuable thing that she or her family would ever own. Like, why did she do this? Well, whilst we may be baffled by that, as we also identified, and as Phil so rightly said, those around her were equally indignant. You know, some of those present were saying indignantly to each other, why this waste of perfume? We could have sold that for more than a year's wages, and the money could have been given to the poor, and they rebuked her harshly. I love this response, as Phil said, like, so natural. Like, how many of us would have exactly that reaction? What an absolute staggering waste of money. You know, I also can't help but hear those folks that indicate, in like, that indignation is almost like trying to curry favor with Jesus. Like, does anyone else hear that? Trying to score points with Jesus, being like, well, if I had that much disposable wealth, I would sell it and give it to the poor. Hey, Jesus, did you hear what I just said? I said, if I had that much disposable wealth, I'd sell it and give it to the poor. Yeah. And like, these guys, they clearly think that they're kind of vibing with Jesus here and on the same wavelength. And you can't really blame them, because Jesus has been relentlessly teaching about giving your money to the poor. In fact, there was a guy just a couple of chapters ago who said, what must I do to gain eternal life? And he says, sell all of your possessions and give it to the poor. And so, his apprentices are on the right kind of track. But Jesus, in this instance, doesn't agree with them. He doesn't agree with them here. He says, leave her alone. Why are you bothering her? It's almost as if Jesus sees this woman's heart and understands her motivations behind her actions. He says, she has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you'll always have with you, and you can help them anytime you want, but you will not always have me. The other people in the scene clearly don't understand why she's doing this strange act like us. But they don't know what's going on, and Jesus says that he does. Jesus says, she did what she could. She poured perfume on my body beforehand to prepare for my burial. Now, I must have read this story like 100 times, and I've heard it preached and spoken on in churches a whole bunch. But there's a detail here that jumped out to me this week that's never occurred to me before. And it's occurred to me because we've been reading through this biography in the way that we have. We've been taking a couple of chapters a week, and we've heard the words of Jesus in their fullness washing over us, and we've heard them unpacked, and something's jumped out to me that's never jumped out to me before. And it's this thing of, like, a couple of chapters ago, Jesus was telling his disciples what's going to happen next. What he tells them 3 times what's going to happen at the end of the story. He repeatedly tells them he's about to die and be buried, and then he's going to be raised back to life again. And each time he does that, there follows a little account of how his apprentices just completely fail to give the right response. They completely fail to respond in an appropriate way. Or if I were to put it another way, when they've worked out who Jesus is and when they've had a powerful encounter with him, they've not known what they're supposed to do with that. They just haven't known. But this woman does. Here's an example of a person who understands exactly who Jesus is and what she should do about it. I think that what Mark is doing here is at the 11th hour, just before Jesus is arrested and killed, he presents this woman to us as an example of someone who gets it. We should pay really close attention to this. This woman, when she pours out this perfume over Jesus, is saying, I think, at least three things that we should pay attention to. First of all, she's recognizing that Jesus is the Messiah. Now, that word Messiah is a bit of a funny word. It's a bit of a churchy word. There seems to be like a bit of latent understanding of what that word means. Anybody seen Dune? Anybody watch Dune? Dune 1 and Dune 2 recently? Oh, wow. Not as many people as I thought. But there we go. That Dune is the story of a promised hero who will come and bring freedom and liberation to an oppressed people. It's the story of a much anticipated king who will bring resolution to generations of people and to their people's hope and for their wholeness. The concept of Messiah has been adopted and adapted by modern media, but it finds its origin in the Bible and in the story of Jesus. Jesus comes onto the scene, and the question is, could this man be the Messiah? Could this man be the resolution of all of our hopes? Now, not everybody thought that Jesus was the Messiah. A whole bunch of people thought he was nothing but a troublemaker. You know, as we heard a couple of weeks ago, many thought that he was nothing but a rebel, and he was really divisive. But this woman, by pouring the perfume on Jesus, by pouring it over his head, she is nailing her colors to the mast in terms of who she thinks that Jesus is. This woman is declaring, I believe that this man is the Messiah. Now, we might not get that immediately. We might not understand why pouring perfume over somebody's head is that act of nailing your colors to the mast. But the literal meaning of the word Messiah is anointed king. And again, anointing is not really something that we talk about all that much. But but to anoint someone is to slosh oil or something akin to oil over someone's head to set them apart for a special purpose, particularly to set them apart to rule. Now, last year, I'm sure many of us watched King Charles being crowned in Westminster Cathedral. And there was a moment in the ceremony, I wonder if you noticed it, when he was anointed with oil. He was anointed as king. And again, that practice finds its root in the Bible. Kings would have been anointed before they became king. And this woman has taken this moment to anoint Jesus as king. She's taken something valuable and precious, something irreplaceable, and she's poured it over Jesus to make a statement, to say, I believe that you are the promised king. So that's the first thing. She's identifying that Jesus is the Messiah. The second thing that she's doing is she's preparing him for his burial. And this is the thing which really jumped out for me this week. This is the thing that I really spotted. This woman seems to have heard Jesus predicting his death to his other disciples, and she seems to have taken him seriously. You know, where Peter, the guy who was one of his closest followers, was like, no, that's not going to happen to you. This woman seems to have believed that actually it would. And not only that, she's decided to do something about it. And so she's poured this perfume out over him to prepare his body for burial. I read one commentary this week which said that she probably had no idea what she was doing. And maybe I'm just using my imagination, but I disagree. I think that Jesus' words really affirm her actions. I think she knew exactly what she was doing. I think she had heard Jesus talking about what was about to happen to him. And she asked herself, what can I do to be part of that? How can I honor this king and give myself to be part of what he's about to do? This unnamed and unassuming woman is placed before us as one of the only people in this biography who recognizes Jesus for who he is. One of the only people who sees who he is and responds accordingly. And what's her response? What is her response to this king? Well, in the church, we call her response worship. And that's the third thing that she does. She worships Jesus. By pouring this perfume over Jesus, the woman is engaging in an extravagant act of worship. And worship is another really churchy word. I try not to use many churchy words on a Sunday, but I've used loads today. I heard a really nifty definition of worship once, and I couldn't find it, so I've slightly butchered it, but it went something like this. We are made to worship, and we will worship something. Whatever we give our mind's attention, our heart's affection, or our lives' devotion, that's what we worship. And so worship is the act of giving the best of yourself to something or someone. And we see it all over the place, all the time. You know, people worship all sorts of things. They worship their sports team. They worship Taylor Swift. They worship Fortnite. Remember, it's what we give our mind's attention. Like, how many hours could I lose on Minecraft? That would be my mind's attention. People worship their spouse. They worship their children. You know, whatever the thing or the person is that we give ourselves to, that's what we worship. And this woman has decided that she is going to worship Jesus. This woman has decided that she wants to give her mind's attention, her heart's affection, and her life's devotion to this man, Jesus. You know, Jesus said it himself a different way just a couple of chapters ago. Ryan unpacked it for us last week. You know, a chap asked him, you know, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your mind, your heart, your soul, and your strength. This woman is expressing her love for Jesus in all of those ways with this extravagant gift. But in reality, as extravagant as this perfume is, as expensive as it is, that's really just the tip of the iceberg. This pouring of perfume over Jesus, as extravagant as that is, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There is so much more underneath. There's even more deeper and more costly outpouring that's going on behind the scenes. This woman makes this gesture to Jesus because she has decided to give him the one thing in her life worth more than that perfume. Her whole life, the very life, the breath in her lungs, everything about her, all of it, nothing held back, all in, no reserves, no insurance policies, just wholehearted, whole life, extravagant worship and allegiance to Jesus. Now, I don't know about you. This story eats my lunch. Anybody else know that phrase? Like, it ruins my day in a good way. Like, you know, you get to your lunch and you find someone's eating your lunch. That ruins your day, doesn't it? This story eats my lunch because I am so in awe of this woman. I have so many questions for her. You know, I've been following Jesus my whole life, and I don't know if I've ever had an encounter with Jesus that would inspire that level of devotion. Like, in some ways I'm envious of her, in some ways I'm terrified of her. You know, if that's what it means to follow Jesus, if I'm totally honest, if I'm allowed to be honest, am I allowed to be honest? I think I'm miles away from that. Just being honest. I wonder where you are today. I wonder where you find yourself. You know, some of us are still making up our minds about Jesus, and honestly, this act of whole life, all in allegiance to Jesus might look really foolish, and you might well be right. Others of us have been following Jesus for ages, and maybe we've got a bit complacent about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. I don't know about you, but Western culture seems to encourage us to view our faith and our allegiance to Jesus as like a bolt-on to our lives, that we can kind of pick and choose the bits that we like and ignore the bits we don't like, and that we can engage with God and church community when it works for us, but it's like one thing amongst many, and not my defining thing, not my everything. Or maybe you're somewhere else. Maybe you feel completely disenchanted with Jesus. Maybe you feel like actually you're heading in completely the opposite direction of him. And that's okay too. You know, one of the really important things about being a Christian community is that we welcome everybody, no matter where you are on your journey, even if you're heading away from Jesus today. If that's you, you're really welcome here. And your questions are welcome here too. And so we are going to respond today as we always do. We are going to celebrate communion together, and we're going to do that before the kiddos come back in again. And we've actually created a little bit of extra space up at the front this afternoon. And so what I'd like to invite all of us to do is to come forward if we would like to respond like the woman in the story. Kiri and band, would you be up for coming and joining me? That would be great. So I just want to invite all of us to come forward and respond like that woman in the story who came and gave her everything, her perfume, but the perfume was really an emblem of her whole life. If you feel convicted today about following Jesus and worshipping him with your whole life, then I want to invite you to come forward and to receive communion today. Communion is where we take some gluten-free, dairy-free bread, we tear off a chunk and we dip it in the juice to represent Jesus body which was broken for us and his blood which was shed for us. And in this moment, we are joining with Jesus and saying yes to him. But today, when we receive communion, instead of then returning to your seat, I want to encourage you to come and stand here at the front, to remain standing, to keep coming forward and to stand here as we worship. I want us to stand at the front and do some business with God in our heads and in our hearts, to commit ourselves, to be honest with God, as I've tried to be this afternoon, to say, you know, Lord, actually, I'm a million miles away from that. That kind of devotion to you terrifies me, but I want to learn. I want to try. I want to give you more. I want to worship you. Like those other people that have encountered Jesus in Mark, I believe that you are the King. I want to pour my life out for you. I might have said that before, but I want to say it again. And so this moment, this is not going to be for everybody. One of the things that we do here is we say everybody is welcome to take communion, and that's absolutely correct today as well. That's absolutely true. But today, I want to encourage you to only come forward and receive communion and then stand here if you really want this to be true for yourself. If you really want to identify with that woman, if you want to make that statement to Jesus, and if you want to come and do some business with him in your heart, then this space is for you, this communion is for you. And these guys are going to lead us in a couple of songs as we respond. And we've got some time to do this. So take your time. Don't rush up, but do come up. But also, if it's not for you, that's okay too. So why don't we all stand together?